chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in and welcome back. It's been a few days since we've been with you. Had a nice long weekend. Hopefully, everyone enjoyed the holiday, whether you celebrated or not. It's always nice to take some time off and hang out with family and friends, and to me that's what these holidays now have pretty much turned into, because they're all, most of them have just turned into these consumerist you know, whatevers, and we're out there, you know, celebrating independence, but then people say, well, independent from what? Well, it's a good question, because we're not so independent anymore. You know, but at the very least, you know, it's nice to, you know, like I said, take the time off and hang out with people that you haven't seen and enjoy some rest from work, because I know everybody's got to work a shitload nowadays just to make it, you know, just to pay the bills. And, you know, it's a really tough time for people, especially young people, you know, and we're, for the most part, we're sold this dream, this American dream, where, you know, if you go to college and you work hard, well, then you're going to get rich and stuff. And that's the kind of thing that they tell us. But, you know, unfortunately, that's not always the case. Of course, there's always exceptions to the rule. But, you know, in general, the millennial generation, the young people, the people that are listening to this show, for the most part, are pretty much finding themselves in a pretty tough place. And, you know, I want to bring up this thing that's going on in Greece, because I think it's really foreshadowing of what could happen here. And plus, you know, what's going on over there. So many people are in a very, you know, uncertain times. And, you know, that's something that we need to talk about and hopefully prevent from happening here. I'm not sure if it's completely preventable. But we can always hope, we could always try. And at least if we know what's going on, you can be better prepared than maybe the general population, because let's face it, the general population, a bunch of brainwashed, cognitive dissonant people, unfortunately, I hate to say it, but hopefully we can work together and make less and less of the people brainwashed and unbrainwash them and unpropagandize them. And that's what we hope to do here at the Anti-Media, here on the radio. Anyway, this radio show, it's all about you. It's all about your voice. We have a phone number if you'd like to call in and join the conversation. Feel free to give me a call, 718-717-8296. Once again, it's 718-717-8296. And I'm flying relatively solo tonight. My co-host will be on a little bit later. He had some school stuff that he had to deal with. And Jake's not going to be joining us on Mondays. He will be joining us on Wednesdays, But Jake's having to work overtime because he's saving money to get to Burning Man, which is that awesome music and cultural festival, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, so Jake will be here on Wednesday with us. We're also hoping to have Ponder on the show Wednesday. He's the guy that did our intro music. Hopefully everyone enjoys our intro music. It's some conscious hip hop from here locally in San Diego, and the guy's pretty, he's got a really good, you know, conscious message and a political message, and very anti-establishment. We'll have him on the show hopefully on Wednesday. If not, we'll for sure have him on Monday. And let's see what he has to talk about on Wednesday, and I'm sure it'll be interesting. And if you guys enjoy the music, make sure you check it out, and we'll talk about it. How to download his new songs. All of his music is free, by the way. You could download it. You could always give him a donation too, which is cool. You don't have to, but you can download his music, and you know that's always nice for the musicians to get a little donation here and there. But also, the other thing is, make sure you check us out Monday through Friday, because we have this show going 5 days a week. We do, me and DB and Jake do Monday and Wednesday. SM Gibson does Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we have LaVon on Friday. Same time, same place, same website. You could bookmark it. If you can't listen to the show for whatever reason and you'd like to hear it after it's already aired, you can find it on YouTube, UCY TV, or just search us, The Anti-Media Radio. And you'll be able to find it. Also, on the UCY homepage on the left side, there's a little archive section. You can listen to the shows there as well. I think there's only like 5 or 10 weeks in the past, but on YouTube you can find all of our shows. We do have a couple callers on the line now that I want to bring in here. First of all, Manny Aguilar from LA. How you doing, man?
What's up, Nick? A lot to report, as always, you know that, and all that, and just... But other than that, pretty good. You know, I just finished listening to a show, which is Flavio Pulso from the Barrio, because they had basically talking to people from the mothers, and of course, one of the guys from the 43, Nayo Sitama, in Acapulco, in the state of Guerrero, and all that. So that was kind of nice to know that the moment is still going, you know?
Yeah, man, it's you know, the... Many people probably still aren't aware of it because it's been an issue that hasn't been talked about much. But the people out in the people in down in the state of Guerrero in Mexico, you know, they're dealing with this huge tragedy. The cops and the government. I mean, it's this huge collusion between the cops, the government, the drug cartels. They kidnapped a bunch of these students / activists, 43 of them to be exact. And you know, they're still. They still haven't found the bodies, or they still haven't located the people. They don't. They've been presumed dead, but there's no way of knowing for sure. And so, you know, there's a continuing action going on here in San Diego, all over Mexico, and in all kinds of other cities as well, to try to raise awareness to this. Because, you know, what many people don't realize is that the U.S. Is also complicit in this stuff, because we're supplying the weapons, the tanks, the Hummers. The Humvees, whatever you want to call them, that the Mexican government is using to oppress its own people. And, you know, the Mexican government is notoriously corrupt. The drug cartels have infiltrated basically every portion of the government as well. And we're sending billions and billions and billions of dollars worth of mostly military aid down there to supposedly fight the drug war. But, you know, all that stuff, it's like, well, once the government gets it and they get these tanks and these Humvees and these helicopters, who are we to say that they have to use it only to fight the drug war? First of all, the drug war is a flawed idea. The drug war needs to end like right away. Second of all, there's no way to keep track of all this equipment. We're giving them all these weapons, and they're just turning it and using it on their own people. And we act like we're doing a service to democracy or something over there, but that's not the case, is it?
No, that definitely is not, and stuff like that. And it just, I still got my. My cage rip is really, you know, I mean, I was down in Murrieta, which you'll ask me later, and I'll tell you about that. But, I mean, I'm still, you know, my bruises in the back. I mean, these guys just took me through the gutter, you know, and stuff like that. And just thank the GOD that I'm back in the States. Actually, I never thought I would ever say that I was, you know, glad to be back in the States. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, as bad as it is getting up here, the police state here and the checkpoints and the cops killing people, it's not as bad as it is in Mexico. In many ways, it's a lot worse down there, man. They got checkpoints at every city, on every highway, you know, and I went down there on vacation, dude, and it's like, you know, you every time you go through there, there's guys with assault rifles, there's turrets, and every time you go into a new town, they're sitting there, they got a checkpoint, and they walk by, their guns pointing right at your face as you're driving through. And it's just kind of exemplifies the police state, and it's really a full blown, it's becoming a full blown police state down there in Mexico. Now the problem is that the police state works hand in hand with the cartels, and they pick and choose the sides, you know, and sometimes in certain areas, the cops protect certain cartels and they go after the other ones. And, there was a story that came out in 2014 about how the U.S. government is also giving immunity to certain cartels in exchange for information against other cartels. And we literally allow them to bring billions of dollars of drugs across the border. And then we, you know, there's been, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have heard about Operation Fast and the Furious, where we allow a bunch of weapons to get taken down there and stuff and given to the cartels. And then the weapons come back, end up killing some sheriff or whatever, killing a bunch of people down there. I mean, there's been hundreds of deaths documented that are resulted from the weapons that our government, you know, let go down there. And so, yeah, there's a huge, huge conflict of interest going on. And the people are still trying to get justice for the students that disappeared. But it really, this has become a rallying cry for the overall oppression that has been going on down there. It's not just about these 43 students, man. It's about the big picture, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's just the way, I mean, the brutal way that these cops are. I mean, got to see a lot of blood and stuff like that, and just, you know, they don't hesitate to hit you with batons, man. I tell you, those batons hurt, you know, and it's just really, really, really sad to see other people being hurt at the same time while you're trying to help out and you're being slammed in the damn ground, to say the least, you know, and stuff like that. And so it's just very, very sad of what's happening in Mexico and stuff like that. And I also want people never to forget where their food comes from, and you know, keep on the support for the people down in San Quintín, Baja California, you know.
Yeah, exactly, man. And so we're going to, in a few minutes, we're going to move on to this next story about Greece. But first, I wanted to ask you about this whole, all these Donald Trump comments. I was trying to refrain from talking about this idiot for, you know, I didn't want to give much airtime to him because he's such a fool and he's got no chance of winning. But I ignored it for as long as I could. But now I'm starting to see that the poll numbers are coming back. And now after making these racist remarks against Mexican people, saying that most of them are rapists and drug dealers, and then now he's saying that they're all carrying diseases and all this stuff. How do you feel about these remarks that Donald Trump was making about Mexicans?
Well, you know, I mean, everybody's got bad and good in every country. I've never denied that and stuff like that. But to basically make it look like every Mexican's a drug dealer and stuff like that, it's kind of offensive and it's kind of emotional for me, because here, you know, I got a clean record. I mean, other than being an activist, you know what I mean? But I don't think that's against the law. I mean, well, it is to some people, I guess. I don't know. But what I'm saying is, I've been a good citizen. Never got into, you know, trouble. I always respected people, even when they didn't agree with me and stuff like that. And it's really very emotional for me, because we also talked about Donald Trump and what he did. Just that the Univision, you know, and NBC basically, you know, boycotted him. And a lot of people are saying, hey, you can't do business with us because of those comments and stuff like that. And the timing was perfect, because I was just down there in Riverside County in a city called Murrieta, California, after 1 year, where all that, you know, basically haters came out to stop these buses of these children and stuff like that, you know, and basically calling them illegals. And I like to educate people that are listening to your show. Is there's a, you know, number one, illegal, you know, it's kind of like nobody's illegal, you know. So undocumented immigrants is one thing, and refugees are a different story. You know, those are completely different stories, stuff like that. And so to be hating those poor young kids like that, it is just, I mean, it's just amazing. But then there's some good people out there. There were some good people out there and stuff like that. But the hate that I got to see Murrieta again for the second time, you know, down at this park, and all just, I mean, Tea Party people down there, I mean, people just calling the name possible and stuff like that, and hearing them call other people names and stuff like that, was really, really, kind of like a wake-up call again of what Donald Trump is doing and stuff like that. And then to top it off, you know, I heard, you know, basically saw a story on this couple from Texas that invited a friend of theirs that happened to be black. And then the next day when they looked outside their window, their $50,000 white truck was, you know, basically painted with all this hate. And in the hood, it said KKK on it and stuff like that. That's really sad, you know?
It's horrible, man. It's horrible what's being said about people. And you know, here with the recent influx of immigration, you know, people want to call them illegals and all this other thing. But, man, most of the people that are coming up are basically refugees. I mean, they weren't all coming from Mexico. Now, Mexico, as we mentioned before, it's they got the drug war going on. The U.S. basically is spearheading that. And the U.S. government keeps the Mexican government under their sphere of influence. And they make sure that they keep this drug war going strong, and so that it causes a lot of the strife, the economic strife, the violence that the people are running away from. You know, these are refugees, and then you have people coming up from Guatemala, Nicaragua. You know, these governments have been overthrown by the U.S. government several times. And then these guys sit here and say, "Oh, why in the hell are they coming up here, dude? It's because you guys let them overthrow the government a bunch of times down there." You know what I mean? And then they wonder, well, why are they trying to flee their home country? What's wrong with their home country? Well, dude, our policies have caused a lot of bad things going on down there, man. And so I'm not saying it's completely our fault in the U.S., but a lot of it is. Our parents, the baby boomers, they all allowed this shit to happen. And then we, you know, the Monroe Doctrine, which is this foreign policy idea where the U.S. thinks that it can dominate every country in the Western Hemisphere. There's only two countries in North and South America that don't fall under the Monroe Doctrine. And one of them is Cuba and the other is Venezuela. And, we, you know, we see what happens, you know, to them for not, you know, bowing down to the U.S. Sphere of influence. And so, you know, the people, I think, have it all twisted. They think people are coming up here just to go live off of welfare and sit around and get free money and free healthcare and all that stuff. Dude, that's basically not true at all. You know, almost everybody, 99% of the people that come up here, undocumented immigrants, they come up here to work. They come up here to find a better life. And they come up here to escape violence and, you know, economic, turmoil. And, you know, that's basically it. They're not a bunch of people coming up here to be lazy. That's just a complete fabrication. So, like, when people say that kind of shit, like Donald Trump, it just makes you want to slap somebody. And so I'm going to, in a written way, slap the hell out of Donald Trump later on this week. I'm not sure which day I'm going to put my article out. But I'm going to put something out later this week that's going to hopefully get to Donald Trump. And he probably won't rethink his positions, but... at the very least, we should make him look stupid because he is. I have a caller calling in from 714. I can't get to your call yet because I hear a bunch of background noise in your call. When you call back, please mute your microphone and then we'll get you on the call. But for now, we're going to have to not answer that call. I'll answer it next time you call. So hopefully you have your mic muted. But for now, we're going to move on to another economic turmoil situation going on. But first I want to introduce our second caller, which is Claire Bernice. She's one of our awesome journalists at the Anti-Media. Claire, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. So I wanted to jump right into this thing going on in Greece, because this is basically probably the biggest story in the world right now, and it probably will be for at least the rest of the week. So I want to get into this Greece scenario. And you wrote an article on it that we put out this morning. And yep. So I wanted to just quickly talk about what happened in Greece. I know they voted no for the austerity referendum, 61% or so.
Yeah, 61.3% of the people who voted, and actually very close to 63% of the population that was eligible voted. So it was actually a really large turnout for not very much notice. So...
Wow, that's a huge turnout. I mean, we don't see those kind of turnout numbers here in the U.S., like, ever.
No way.
So, yeah. I mean, I guess that kind of it kind of tells us that the people out there are pretty passionate about, you know, what's going on with the austerity and the bailout. And, you know, I guess we should go into a little bit of background here as far as what's going on with the bailouts and how it all happened. Basically, Greece got caught up in the 2008-2009 financial crisis, but you know the problem was brewing, you know, long before that. Their economy had gone into a state of pretty much, you know, it was pretty much stalled out, and they got a really big older population. They people that they call pensioners, people that are reliant on retirements from, you know, the public and the private sector. And so there's a bunch of people, and it's very similar to what we're about to face here in the U.S. with the baby boomers, where you got a bunch of older people that really can't work anymore, and they're reliant on, you know, getting funds from people that are still working. And during the 2008-2009 financial crisis, their economy really kind of went belly up. And so the financial establishment, I guess you can call it, the IMF, the EU Central Bank, the ECB, they all kind of had to go in and bail out Greece. And the problem was is that the bailout terms were really egregious. They're really excessive. They're really greedy. And it's kind of reminiscent as to how the Germans were treated after World War I, and, you know, all these financial penalties. And they also had to leverage, they made the people leverage their, they made the people leverage a lot of the infrastructure and stuff. And so when the Greeks aren't able to pay these bailout terms back, well, then these big bankers are going to try to come in and lay a claim on their, you know, infrastructure and their resources and things like that. And so I think the people out there in Greece have really gotten extremely tired of dealing with these bankers, and now, you know, the bankers keep trying to keep them as part of the EU and keep the whole system together. But it seems like the young people really are the driving force behind this no vote. Is that anything that you've noticed? Like, is there like a divide between the old and young, or what do you think?
It didn't necessarily seem that way, but the unemployment rate in the country is like 25%, but it goes to about 50% for the younger people. So they do have a vested interest in you know, getting out of the European Union, frankly, and getting back to their own currency, the drachma. It would make more sense, but that would cause a lot of instability in the European Union as well, so it's really kind of a mess. And then there was Russia offering, at least a while back, to bail them out, and I know that Putin called Tsipras on the phone after the no vote, and I think he still kind of has designs on getting Greece as an ally, but who knows?
Yeah, I've read that, actually. Russia is definitely thinking about adding them to the BRICS process. And
right.
You know, the BRICS is like the anti-dollar alliance that they're building up because of our hegemony and our onerous foreign policy tactics and stuff like that. But one thing I've read that was pretty interesting is that the bankers that are involved in this and following this resounding no vote, it's starting to bring a lot of these bankers to the table, and they're like, okay, well, maybe we could renegotiate the terms of this austerity. Maybe we could renegotiate the terms of the bailout so that it's not so bad for the Greek people, because now they're starting to realize, okay, negotiations aren't going to go anywhere unless we actually throw a bone to these people. Go ahead.
That's what they were hoping when the finance minister resigned, because he had called the bankers terrorists, and I guess ruffled some feathers and was causing all sorts of problems because he did not like the terms of the loan offer. So he resigned in order to allow the prime minister more bargaining power. So, you know, it's going exactly according to what they were hoping.
Yeah, and so that's what some of these bankers are thinking. Like, okay, well, maybe we can go and renegotiate the terms, make them a little better, more appealing to the Greek people, and then maybe we can get, you know, maybe they can have another referendum, and maybe we can get, you know, 50% of the people to support this bailout, or, you know, this austerity measure, whatever you want to call it. But the problem is that. Some of these bankers are like, well, no, we don't want to do that, because then all these other countries in Europe are going to want to try to do the same exact thing, because Greece isn't the only country that's in trouble here. You got Italy, Spain, Portugal, and various other countries that are dealing with the same exact scenario. And they're worried that if they allow the Greeks to get away with renegotiating it into like really favorable terms, and they're worried that okay, now all these other countries are going to want to join, you know, join the party.
Yep. Exactly.
I'm going to try to take this caller real quick, but I have to ask him to mute his mic. Hey, caller from 714, if you can please mute your microphone. Sorry, I had to keep hanging up on you because I keep hearing feedback.
Huh?
Hey, 714, you're on the line. Can you please mute your mic until I come to you?
All right.
Okay, cool. All right. Sorry, Claire, go ahead.
I have no idea what I was going to say.
Oh, no worries. So yeah, these guys are, a lot of these bankers are worried that a bunch of other countries are going to try to pull the same thing that Greece is pulling now. And so that's one of the biggest concerns I read on Bloomberg today. They had a statement from one of the bankers that are involved in this thing. They're worried that some of the guys don't want to negotiate because they think that all these other countries are going to try to do the exact same thing.
Right, the domino effect.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know about the whole European Union. I don't know how that would interplay. It just seems like that if they don't offer Greece a deal, then I can't see how they're not going to pull out of the union. I mean, it might cause a domino effect, but it depends on if they're wanting to actually save the European Union as a whole, as a unit, or if, you know, it just depends if they want to save their money or if they want to save the union.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Exactly. And I have a little theory upon, you know, this whole EU thing. But first I want to go to our co-host, DB Schwartz. He's joining us now on the show. DB, did you have anything to add to this?
Just that talking to people today, man, up here in the Midwest, they're pretty clued in as to what's going on, and everybody's saying, oh crap, do you see what's happening to Greece? Puerto Rico's next. And I kid you not, like four different people told me that today, people I've never met, man. And the political awareness is rising. People are understanding it's going to probably hit home, especially if you're in a service industry, and the American way of life is being threatened as we know it. And I don't know how bad it has to get before people take the fucking Fourth Amendment and use it.
Last week we had a great caller from Puerto Rico, a young guy called in from Puerto Rico, and he was telling us about the situation out there. And apparently they've got like $70 billion in debt that's coming up, that's coming due really soon here.
72, Nick, and then Greece is 152.
Yeah, and so you got, you know, and Puerto Rico is a lot smaller than Greece, smaller area, less people. And what the caller was mentioning to us about Puerto Rico was that it's a very similar scenario. It's kind of a microcosm of what's going on the larger scale here in the U.S. and in Greece and the other countries in South Europe. Is you got, again, the aging population that can't really work anymore, and they're all retired, and they're all reliant on social services and social security, you know, retirement, pensions, and all that stuff hinges on the young people paying into the system to pay the old people, because the bureaucrats mismanaged the money so badly that all these people paid into these pensions and stuff throughout their whole career, and they paid into the retirement, social security, and all this stuff, and then the government spent all that money, and so then they all that retirement that was supposed to be there for the people, it's already spent, so they got to just tax the shit out of the young people that are trying to work.
Well, you also have the young people moving away from both countries, too, like in mass. I mean, both from Greece and from Puerto Rico. That's part of the problem. The working-aged, able people are actually leaving the countries. That is not going to help the situation at all.
Exactly.
Brain drain, Nick.
Yep, it's a brain drain, and it's the people fleeing because they're getting put under these onerous economic situations, you know, and you can't tax these working people to death. You can't tax them for 50% of their income just to feed the old people. Then what happens? And the young people aren't going to have any kids because they can't afford to have kids. And then by the time they get old, there's going to be no kids left to take care of them, to pay for, you know, to pay into these programs. And so that's what we're starting to see, man. And to me, I mean, a lot of it goes back to bureaucratic mismanagement. But then if we look at Greece and the EU in a at the bigger picture, Well, the EU is the perfect example of why centrally planned economics is a failed idea, man. You can't sit there and put a whole group of countries, especially Europe, where each country has such a diverse cultural and ethnic and national heritage, where you can't put all these people under one giant economic umbrella and expect it all to be, you know, fine and dandy. The truth of the matter is that, you know, we need to break up the EU. We need each country to individually deal with its own mess, because, you know, as we're seeing with Greece, one country's problems can lead to a huge issue for the rest of the entire continent.
Yeah, and it's not only that, Nick, but the economies are so different. Go to the south, it's tourism. Go to the north, it's manufacturing. And you can't expect an economy that can work year-round to go ahead and make the currency equal status to a regional area that's dependent on the seasons. It's just ridiculous.
Well, and they made the more general mistake of treating Greece as if it was on par with the rest of the countries economically and politically. And so they loaned to the country that way, like as if it were that model, and it just wasn't. So when they had all this money, they assumed that the other countries would help to bail it out once it was in debt, and that was just the wrong assumption.
Yeah, I mean, everyone, you know, they're all being pretty greedy, and like I mentioned at the beginning, the initial terms of the bailout were pretty onerous terms. You know, they weren't the greatest terms, and so the people are pretty resentful towards it. And I think most of the people, I was looking at Reddit today, and there was a good thread on Reddit about people from Greece talking about how they voted and why they voted. And man, a lot of the people out there that voted no, they're ready to leave the EU. They don't want to be part of it anymore because they know that it's been, you know, that it's been pretty much disastrous. And they see all these bailouts and all these new loans as just prolonging the problem. A lot of these people are willing to take the pain right now in order to be, you know, in 5 or 10 years from now to get their feet back under them. They're willing to take the pain right now, you know. And so I think that's probably a trend we're going to see. I really don't see this thing in Greece ending where Greece stays part of the EU. I mean, I really doubt that. The people are pretty motivated to leave the EU. So I think we're probably going to see that happen by the end of the week. I mean, you know, at least the foreshadowing of that happening, we're probably going to see that play out this week. So we do have a couple callers on the line. First, the caller from 714 that's been waiting on the line. We'd like to go to you first. How's it going? Did you want to chime in on this conversation?
Hey, hello?
Yeah, you're on. How you doing? What do you want to talk about?
Good. I want to talk about the thing that's happening in Greece. I think it's a matter of time before that happens right here in California.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. California is in a similar situation. We've got a huge mountain of debt. Fortunately, we do have a lot of young working people, and, you know, we got Silicon Valley still that's driving the economy around here, and it's all younger people working up there at Facebook and Google and all that stuff. But I think you're right. A lot of the states, in fact, California had the first city in the country to go bankrupt, and that happened like, what, 2-3 years ago. But we're seeing it in, you know, in other states as well. And a lot of it comes from bureaucratic mismanagement. It's not that the economy is bad. Shit, California has one of the biggest economies in the world. But they've been spending our money on all these crazy things.
Yeah.
Go ahead, man. We're waiting on you.
But also, like, all right, what about the microchips and all that?
What microchips are you talking about?
The mark of the beast?
The microchips that we're going to get implanted by 2017.
Don't accept them. Don't accept them and be ready to go, man. That's all I can say, because they're going to come no matter what. It doesn't matter if it's 2015, 2025, they're going to come.
Yeah, I think, you know, 714, man, thanks for chiming in here, man. Thanks for calling in. Feel free to keep listening to the show. We got to move on to the next caller here. But yeah, he brings up a good point about kind of this transition into the transhumanism technology, and, you know, Google Glass. And there was a few reports about this company in Sweden that's already implanting microchips into their employees voluntarily. But yeah, I mean, this is the future, man. This is the technology. It's going to get smaller and smaller, and it's going to become, you know, we're going to be wearing it in our sunglasses, and then it's only a matter of time before we start wearing it like inside of our bodies and stuff. It's a really, you know, like any other technology, it's got the potential to make our lives more convenient. It's got a potential to make our lives a living hell, you know. And like DB was saying, we got to just be, you know, discern between what we actually want to use, what we don't. The thing with putting technology inside of your body, if you have a phone and your phone doesn't do what you want it to do, you could throw that phone away, or you can get rid of it, you could sell it. You know, when something's inside of your body, dude, that's when you really got to start wondering, okay, dude, am I really going to want to go through surgery to have this stuff removed if it starts acting up, or if it breaks, or if it does something I don't like it to do, or if we find out the NSA is tapping into it, which it probably will be. You know, and that's definitely something to keep in mind. We do have another caller on the line. Sorry to go off topic on this technology stuff. Let's get back to Greece. Caller from 859 area code. How you doing? You want to chime in on this conversation?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Do you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
Basically, I want to say, like, with Greece, like, a lot of America's ideas, you know, we got from Greece. Like, that's crazy that how America's not really helping Greece. Like, I just think that the world is just very, like, crazy for that, you know? Like, we got a lot of policy, you know, policy, like, well, I study history and stuff like that. Like, I feel like we just learned a lot from, like, overseas. We basically, America was founded off of the teachings or things that was picked up from overseas, and we brought it here, and that's how we got the Constitution and things like that, you know? Like, we should give back, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You bring up a good point. Greece is basically the birthplace of republican democracy, or democracy in general, representative democracy and things like that. And then Rome famously adopted those ideas. But, you know, one thing to keep an eye on, and this is kind of a cyclical thing that we see going on now, because we see this referendum and it really was an expression of democracy. 60% of the people got out there and said, no, we're not going to buy this bailout. But just like with Greece, man, it was a democracy and it was great. And then it turned into, you know, Alexander the Great and, you know, conquering the world and stuff. And then those ideas went over to Rome, and Rome was like, yeah, we're going to be a republic. We're going to vote and we're going to do all this stuff, and people are going to have rights and people are going to have, you know, due process and all that stuff. And then what happened with Rome? Again, Rome became the Roman Empire, went and conquered the world. And then same thing here. We brought those, the initial ideas, the good ideas, the pure ideas of democracy. I mean, these are positive ideas, and they have positive intention. But here in the U.S., we kind of took those ideas and we're like, okay, well, now we're falling back into that same cycle where we're turning into those empires now, and we got 1,000 bases around the world in 150 different countries, and, you know, we're trampling over all these other countries and causing all this stuff. And like you were saying, man, we got to study our history and keep an eye out for these traps that always tend to come up when we practice democracy. It always seems like it always recurs back. Now, Greece is no longer the empire, and you know, but they're still dealing with these really messed up things, and they're part of the European empire now. The European Union is kind of an empire in the way that it kind of dictates policy over to a bunch of different countries. And I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned by looking back and then looking at what's going on today and applying all that stuff, you know, to the modern day scenarios that we're facing. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
No, you basically covered everything, man. I'm glad that you know this stuff. You know, a lot of people, that history repeats itself. And just, you know, I'm glad that there's people out there that think like the way I do, you know, that really knows that, you know, that can pick up things like that, see where history is about to repeat itself, you know.
Hey, there's nothing new under the sun. This has been done like 5 times before.
Yep, if not more. Hey, man, thanks for calling in. Feel free to continue on the show. We're gonna continue on here. So there's a – he made a really good point, man, and you know, Greece really did bring a lot of these awesome ideas into fruition, and they've been adapted and applied in different places. But a lot of the ideas are definitely fallible, and they can definitely, you know, have their flaws. And we're seeing it right now, man. We're witnessing it here in the U.S. But one thing I want to bring up here, and we have an article about this on the anti-media, is that outside of Spain, Italy, Portugal, these are the ones that we all know, they're already dealing with this mess, this austerity and this massive debt and stalled out economy. But England, the UK, is also dealing with it. And we have an article up from our new UK correspondent, Michaela, about, you know, how the Greek vote has basically inspired people in England to kind of stand up against austerity as well. And literally overnight, there was a massive petition that went up and got massive amount of people signed onto it, where now the UK wants to have its own austerity referendum. What do you guys think about that, Claire?
Sorry, you caught me off guard there. I think that it's a good idea. I don't, this whole interconnected global economy, it's just bad news. I mean, you're seeing it with Greece and the EU, and everything kind of goes downhill from there. I mean, we're going to have the effects of Puerto Rico and Greece, and, well, there's an argument for China's market right now is having a lot of problems. And that was an indicator right before our 2008 crash. So all this interconnectedness cannot be necessarily a good thing, in my opinion. But that's just a personal thing.
I think you're right. And I think the whole EU crisis is a perfect example. And then the EU is kind of like a, you know, if you look at the EU, it's all these countries, but they're almost the size of like our states and stuff. And the US is kind of living under the same kind of scenario. After the Civil War, we basically became less of a federation and more of a, you know, federal entity. And I think we're seeing those flaws come out when you try to have one central group plan the economics for massive amounts of people, hundreds of millions of people. And obviously you can't, you know, they tell you in school all the time, it's like, oh, everybody's different. Everyone should accept everybody for being different and having their own flaws. But you guys are all going to have to live under this one economic system, and you're all going to have to live under this one education system, and everyone's going to fit into this cookie cutter pie. And you're all going to have to, you know, be part of this. If not, then, you know, move to Somalia. And that's basically the option that we're given. And obviously those options aren't working that well. We see it in Greece. We see it in Europe. I mean, have you seen the amount of people that have gone into the streets? Not even just in Greece, but in all these other countries in Europe in solidarity with the vote? I mean, the numbers are in the millions, hundreds of thousands at one protest. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, these are huge amounts of people. So these ideas are becoming pretty popular. And I think, as you mentioned with China, I mean, we're starting to see the global death throes of global economics. Now, as you were mentioning, the international interconnectedness, it's awesome for people like us. I mean, you're in Ohio, DB's in Minnesota, Manny's in Los Angeles, I'm here in San Diego. We're all here on the internet. We're all connected. And that part is great because we're all consenting individuals and we're voluntarily connecting together and doing, you know, working together and stuff like that, collaborating. But the problem is when you have involuntary international organizations like, let's say, the UN, NATO, the ECB, the Federal Reserve, you know, these are all ideas that aren't based on just voluntary voluntarism or consent. You know, these are ideas that you got to either abide by them or you get a gun shoved down your throat and you're either killed or you're thrown into exile. You know, and that's not, you know, these aren't the ideals of democracy. This is not what the Greeks were trying to do when they first set out to, you know, start up this great idea of democracy. It wasn't supposed to be like, dude, it's not democracy down the barrel of a gun or down the edge of a sword. It should be by consent, you know, and unfortunately, the global powers, the establishment, the, you know, the powers that be, they don't really like this idea of voluntary interaction or consent. They want, you know, the market to be controlled, and they want to be at the top of the market, and that's what the ECB is doing. And the people of Greece, gauging from, you know, this massive no vote, 61% of the people turned out and said no. Well, the people of Greece aren't buying it anymore, and so, from all indicators, a lot of people in Europe are pretty much done with it.
Don't forget, Nick, that when they were getting this whole system together, they were talking about white Christian men. And that whole gang is still all together.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And
so they're not going to let people in just because you think you're waving a flag, taking a flag down, or having a parade. It's still the exact same club.
Yeah, and it's been the same club of people for, you know, since the invention of government, you know, and we're talking about the Babylon days and, you know, the Mesopotamia days and Sumerians and the Egyptians.
You know, I think one of the problems, too, is that with globalization, for at least for the economy, we're all so specialized with what we do. Like, the U.S. doesn't really manufacture all that much anymore. I mean, we have to import certain things, and it's the same way all around the world. So it's not like any country can just suddenly withdraw from the global market and be okay. You know what I mean?
Remember, we don't have to import those things.
Well,
we've done
no.
that strategically. And
yes.
I promise you, if we ever have a World War III, we're going to be production-wise just fine.
Exactly, but that's not what they want. I mean, they have put us in this position, you know what I mean, right now.
It's a false poverty.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point. Go ahead, Manny.
I just want to mention, I think the biggest problem to terrorism to this country, you know, because everybody's worried about immigration, like Donald Trump, he should move back to Texas, you know, he belongs there, but that's another story. Basically, the biggest threat I've always said about the government is that the heavy stuff imported from other countries can be a big, big, big terrorist problem, you know, against Homeland Security. Because anybody, like something, say, made in China, somebody can plant something right there, then packages get here, boom, you know what I mean, and stuff like that. And so, man, people can jeopardize us, even with our food. I'm even starting to worry about where some of those food is coming from, to be honest with you. That people can just put anything in our food, and boom, there we go, you know?
Well, the food part's already happening, man. They're giving us the slow poison, though, on that.
Well, that's true.
But yeah, you make a good point, man. Like the more, and also as Claire was saying, the more stuff that you the less self-reliant you are, the more you rely on outside sources, the more vulnerable you are. Whether it's to terrorists, mm-hmm. whether it's to attack, whether it's just to food shortages or energy shortages, we've seen it before. When they cut the oil off back in, you know, the 70s and that kind of thing, and you know, it's leverage. You know, when you rely on these other countries, it's leverage that can be used against you. You know, fortunately for Americans, we are the empire, the sole empire left standing on the earth. We are the reserve currency, so we kind of get that Roman citizen effect where we get all the benefits and not as much of the downside of all these, you know, horrible things going on. But I do want to bring up. I did want to try to get into how the TTP and the TTIP, which is the European version, ties in with Greece and with what's going on in China. As Claire mentioned, the Chinese stock market took a huge hit. Their economy overheated several years ago, and now they're in the death throes right now. Their stock market's on the verge of collapse. They had a bunch of irresponsible monetary policy, very similar to how the U.S. Federal Reserve was doing. But how do you guys think this TPP, TPIP ties in with Greece and all this economic turmoil going on right now? DB, you want to go first?
Nah, man. Go have somebody else go because I have too many thoughts.
Claire, do you have anything to add to this?
I hadn't thought about the TPP playing in with Greece, to be honest with you.
Well, I think definitely it has something to do with what's going on in China, because pretty much everyone knows that the TPP is a economic containment. It's basically an economic Great Wall around China.
TAP?
The TPA is the Trade Promotion Authority. That's basically just giving Obama...
The transatlantic, the TAP.
I think they're calling it the TPP, the TPIP or something like that.
Well, that's
the European version.
That's the cutoff.
TPP.
That's to cut off Russia from Europe as a market.
Yeah, and definitely, if you look at the map on the TPP thing, and you look at the countries involved, I mean, it basically is literally it's an encirclement of China economically. And I don't know if they're trying to shift away from manufacturing in China to try to contain their military or what. I mean, it's not a, I think it's a, not a wise move. I don't see China as a huge international threat. China, historically, looking at China, they've always been an internal threat to themselves. They've always fought each other, and they always have warring factions, you know, all the dynasties and stuff. China was always split up into two, three, four different parts, and they always fought against each other. But if you look at China, they were never really an expansionary culture. You know, they weren't trying to take other countries over and stuff. They were big, you know, they're pretty big on trade.
Except
for a while.
Tibet.
Oh yeah, Tibet. But again, that's like right on their own, you know, that's right on their own borders and stuff. They're not going and like landing ships in Europe trying to take over England or anything like that. You know what I mean? England is actually the one that landed ships in China and tried to take them over. So I don't see China as a huge threat, but I'm not saying that they can't be. And I see the TPP as a big threat to them economically, and they may get pushed into the corner far enough where they start lashing out. You know, and it's like that old saying, you don't want to prod a bear, you don't want to corner a cat. And that's kind of what the TPP is doing to China. But also I think the TPIP, I think, has to do with Greece, because they're trying to keep this giant economic entity together, the EU, to make it more of a trading, you know, a trade post to keep, like you said, Russia, to keep Russia out of the economics of Europe. And I don't know the exact connections, because it hasn't come, you know, it hasn't been revealed yet, but I'm pretty sure that there are definitely implications going on with these trade deals and what's going on with Greece. And I know the US is behind the scenes, they're very desperate to keep Greece part of the EU for whatever reason. You know, Greece is a very strategic location in the Mediterranean. They're right on some of the trade routes through the Mediterranean right there. So yep. There's a lot of implications with Greece.
That's why they were going to, you know, write in the allowance for human slavery with Malaysia, because of the trade routes and the military strategic points near China for the Navy. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of maneuvering going on with both of these deals.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess that's something that we're going to have to continue to keep an eye on. I'm not sure exactly what the connections are going to be right now. Now, news on the TPP, there hasn't been many updates. The TPA has been signed by Obama, the Trade Promotion Authority, which basically gives him the authority to negotiate with all the countries. And once they find a deal, then it's up to the Congress. It's only an up or down vote, no amendments, no debate. So we can pretty much guarantee that once Obama does make a deal, if he does, that it's going to pass, because, you know, the Congress is basically, we all know what the Congress is. It's got a 9% approval rating. It's in the pocket of big business. The Republicans are the biggest cheerleader for the TPP, and it's pretty ironic because they're the ones saying, oh, Obama's a dictator. We can't give him any more power, but except with our entire economy, let's go ahead and give him that power instead. You know, and it's like, oh, really? You guys just got done saying Obamacare was horrible and because Obama had too much power.
So I'm not worried, Nick, because as soon as everybody that's literate in this country gets a hold of these laws they've been passing, they'll all be repealed.
That'd be the hope. I mean, I hope people start to realize that.
People just don't
idea.
Understand what's been passed into law yet. It hasn't been used on them yet. But once it's used on them or a family member, and everyone gets up in arms and says, "Hey, why is my so-and-so, you know, detained for 2 months for no charges, and the lawyer can't even find out what's going on?" As soon as that happens a million times in this country, it's a done deal.
Yeah, man. I mean, all we can hope for is that people continue to spread the message. As the previous caller was mentioning, you know, he was happy to hear people that were thinking similarly to him, and hopefully that you know, it just keeps going and perpetuating, and more people find out about what's going on. And I mean, really, that's all we can hope for. So the show's getting almost to a close here. I want to bring up this other story that Claire wrote that is really big, and it's gotten very, very little play in the mainstream media. We covered it, and it got the attention of some people in Afghanistan, some pretty influential people, in fact. But basically, there was a recent raid in Afghanistan by the military, and you know, we have this treaty over there with them where we're not supposed to be doing any more military stuff. And, you know, Obama came out and said, hey, the war is over. We ended that war. But the facts are a little bit different. You know, the facts say that we actually are still doing military campaigns in Afghanistan. And this raid that took place, it basically broke international law, and it's borderline war crime. Claire, did you want to fill us in a little bit about what's going on with that story?
Yeah, it's crazy to me. So the U.S., under the ostensible purpose of raiding a weapons cache, drops from a helicopter some probably, I don't know, special ops teams at 4:30 in the morning, and this house that they're raiding is just a local commander of a supposedly illegal militia. He has no ties to the Taliban or Al-Qaeda or anything else, and they raid his house and supposedly destroy his weapons cache. And it angered the local population so badly that they rioted basically in the streets for a long time, and the military finally had to remove them from the streets. But the thing, there are so many odd circumstances about this. For one thing, you know, raiding a house in the middle of the night, all right, according to our bilateral security agreement with Afghanistan, we are not allowed to do any unilateral military operations at all unless we either have permission of the Afghan forces or unless our service members are directly threatened with bodily harm. And obviously at 4:30 in the morning, that's just not the case. And then the Army colonel, who is the spokesperson, giving the justification for this, used the term, you know, coalition, which the NATO coalition pulled out in last year, at the end of last year. So his excuse doesn't even make sense. It's just, there's so many just odd and fishy things about this. None of it makes sense.
And one of the spokesperson or at least the aide to Hamid Karzai, which is the prime minister, that he was a prime minister up until the end of 2014, I believe.
Until the end of September, yeah.
And he got a hold of your article, and he actually he retweeted it, and then he was asking the initial reporter from Reuters about, you know, where did this, you know, authority come from, you know,
right.
where did this authorization come from?
Right. He was saying the bilateral security agreement does not say this. Why is this Army colonel saying this? And he's absolutely right. It does not say that. And, of course, the Reuters journalist never got back to him. So, you know, there is no answer on that.
Yeah. So, you know, long story short is basically, I mean, we're doing all kinds of things around the world that are basically illegal. And as you mentioned, it pissed off the local population. There was a story that broke last week about how we bombed out some guy in Libya, and he was supposedly an Al-Qaeda, big-time Al-Qaeda operative, and we claimed to kill him. And, you know, it's the fifth time that we've claimed killing this guy. And then, of course, we claimed that we were like, oh, we hit this guy in Libya, and then the local report said, no, maybe we didn't hit the guy in Libya, it wasn't him. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that we're sitting here and we're bombing so many different countries that it's hard to even keep track. You know, I thought our operations, like, we're done in Libya, and I consider myself a person that's well-informed on foreign policy. I thought it was over. I mean, I know Libya is in a shit situation. I know it's in the midst of a civil war. I know it's being run by warlords. I know ISIS has infiltrated Libya. But I thought that we were done bombing in that country. I thought we just went in, took out Gaddafi, and said, okay, that's done. But no, we're still bombing that country 4 years later. And this is Obama's war. This is Hillary's war. We're bombing in Somalia. We're still running operations in Afghanistan. We're increasing our operations in Iraq. Now we're bombing in Syria. We're arming and training people in Ukraine. I mean, when does it end? Like, where does it stop? Like, how many countries do we need to have these military operations in before we start realizing, A, that they're not helping, and B, they're actually harming us? I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, it's just so crazy that this stuff is still going on. And you know, Syria is the new battleground. And, you know, who knows what's going to end up happening. There's been so many reports about ISIS and, you know, who their alliances really lie with and all that stuff. I guess we're going to have to wait till next show to finish that off. Thank you, everyone, for calling in. Claire, thanks. Manny, peace. DB, catch you Wednesday. Make sure you tune in tomorrow, same time, same place, Anti-Media Radio.
Buenas noches, Claire. Buenas noches, TV. Buenas noches, Nick.
Night, everybody.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo, stereo.